Back together again, you and I, Tuesday, May 16th, 2023, on Connecticut Today. We welcomed commuter advocate Jim Cameron for his regular stop by to chat about his latest column, this one on the state's drunk driving problem. I also had a few thoughts to kick off the show on the latest Republican presidential primary numbers, which to me are shocking. And amid the craziness in the nation and in the state, this gentleman is our own voice of reason, especially when it comes to commuter issues. Talking Transportation is the column every so often in the Connecticut Mirror and other publications. Jim Cameron joins us once again. Mr. Cameron, good afternoon, sir, and how are you?
Paul, I just can't get over the whole idea of Jose doing a podcast.
Yeah, and
I'm fine, sir, and yourself.
And annexing Central and South America.
I would just give him a part-time shift on the air right now.
Why not?
There's a talk show and the host in the making there.
There you go. Yeah, I think so. Jim, you cut right to the chase here of something that I've kind of been harping about for the better part of years here. We have a problem in this state, don't we, with not just booze, but stuff that's being added into it that can't, Jim, I think, make it any better, can it? What are you talking about here?
I was stunned to find that Connecticut has the third highest number of drunk driving deaths in the United States. Third highest in the United States. And then you start looking at some of the things that have happened recently, and you wonder, well, now you understand perhaps why the legislature is not doing something to deal with that. Quentin Williams, the state rep who died in a head-on collision, amazing guy, wonderful guy, I'm told. I've never met him. I didn't have a chance to hear him, but tragic death. However, it was discovered, even though he was hit by the car coming in the wrong direction, his blood alcohol level was twice that of what's legal, and he had THC in his system. He had just come from the governor's inaugural ball, okay? Back in March, State Rep. Robin Comey from Brantford rolled her car in front of the state capitol, was arrested for DWI. A year ago, she was incoherent on the floor of the House, obviously unable to get out a sentence and was told to basically stand at ease. There were reports during the pandemic that lawmakers were tailgating up on the top of the parking lot next to the state capitol building. And they were drinking on the job. And I have heard reports from other senior gubernatorial appointees basically reinforcing all that, that there's a serious drinking problem in the Capitol, and nobody wants to come to grips with it. And, you know, I'm no Puritan on all this. I mean, if you want to sit in your own home and get drunk or stoned, have at it. But when you get behind the wheel of a car, you're endangering my life, your own, and other people's. And somebody has to do something about this.
You know, Jim, it would be, I think, and after reading your column, I thought about this. Wouldn't it be refreshing in, what are we, in 2023 now? So in 2026, Mr. Cameron, when we elect another governor, whether it's Governor Lamont for his third term or somebody else, if Ned is going to ride off into the sunset here, wouldn't it be refreshing, Jim, if the incoming governor said, you know what, my inaugural ball is going to be alcohol-free. I'm sorry, there's no need for it. Come and schmooze. We'll have lots of juice. We'll have lots of soda. We'll have great food. I'll make up for it with food, but no booze. You know that's never going to happen, Jim, right?
Well, he's not going to sell any tickets to that event.
Well, yeah, that's what I mean.
It's going to be BYO as well, too. You know, they'll be tailgating before they go into the inaugural, not after when they come out. You know, I'm not pointing fingers at any one party. Somebody said, well, you didn't point out that all those people that did those state lawmakers were Democrats. Alcoholism is not something that knows a political boundary.
No.
There are people with a drinking problem. It is being tolerated, and it's setting a rather bad example for the rest of the state. The open container law.
Yes.
Connecticut's one of a handful of states in the country that still allow you to have an open container of booze, not the drinking, not being drunk by the driver, obviously, but what's to stop him from taking a sip every now and then? And, you know, they have also not lowered the blood alcohol count to define what drunk driving is. It's still 0.08. However, there is every indication that if you lowered that and you enforced the law to 0.05%, you would have a whole lot more people getting stopped and arrested for drunk driving. I think we need better law enforcement. I think we need to uncuff the police department and allow them to do their jobs without looking over their shoulder that they're going to get sued every 5 minutes. Because I think a lot of them are not, I think they are rather hesitant these days to get involved in cases that just could get messy. There's no percentage in it.
Our buddy, our pal Jim Cameron here. Check out the column Talking Transportation, a regular feature on the Connecticut Mirror and other sites as well. When we get back to open phones, we'll be at 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Jim, I am stunned. I don't know whether you saw that story in the Hearst, Connecticut papers the other day. It was all around the state. The numbers of NIPS sold. And I mean, well, I said, Jim, what was it? 46 million NIPS in the first 6 months of the year. Now, you mean to tell me those aren't being consumed in vehicles? Come on. We didn't fall off the turnip truck the other day, my friend.
Well, these NIPS, by the way, for your benefit of your your listeners, are the little airline-sized bottles of liquor. I think they're, what, maybe two, I guess 2 ounces?
It's a shot. Like, somebody told me it's basically a shot. Yeah.
A shot. Well, you know, they sell them in the liquor stores, and now they come with a 5 cent deposit.
Yeah.
So you would think that somebody, you know, would be walking around picking these things up. But they're a major trash problem in many different cities. And the towns that got the towns get the money back from this 5 cent deposit. The feeling being that they're going to need to spend it to clean up their streets from all these empty bottles that are tossed around. Apparently, they don't do it. But the towns that got the most money back from these deposits are New Haven, Bridgeport, and Hartford. Mm. Congratulations. No serious drinking going on there. I don't think those are bicyclists that are tossing them by the side of the road. I think you're correct. They are motorists. 132 million NIPS were sold in this state last year.
Wow.
That's extraordinary. It's a huge, over $6.5 million was collected in these 5 cent deposits just for these bottles.
Jim, you
get into the recycling, guys.
Yeah. And Jim, you also mentioned here that's something that's interesting that I've been following here doing the show that I do. The, I guess, relaxation now that's coming possibly for mushrooms, for psilocybin here. Talk about that.
Right. Now, there is legitimate medical data that proves that psilocybin mushrooms can be used properly in dealing with some mental health issues. Probably under the supervision of a doctor, but what this bill is dealing with is not necessarily coming up with medical licenses as they started with marijuana and maybe the slippery slope to making it generally available. This just basically says that if you're caught with less than or up to a half ounce of these magic mushrooms, as they're called, you will only pay a $150 fine. I think the fine goes up the second or third time, but you're not going to be convicted of a crime. You're not going to do jail time. You know, I won't talk about my own misspent youth, but, you know, plenty of people who have had experiences with mushrooms, you know, find them very nice. They're psychedelic. They're enjoyable. And if you're doing it in the pleasure of your own home, on your couch, where you're not going to hurt anybody, perhaps including yourself, great. But there's no police instant test for psilocybin mushrooms or THC from marijuana like there is for drunk driving. We don't have a test. We can't. They can only judge impairment. And I don't want to have that be found out after somebody's been involved in an automobile accident that may have hurt somebody else, a bicyclist, a pedestrian, another person in a car. Again, I don't want to sound like a complete Puritan here, but ever since COVID, we have been anesthetizing ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
We are drinking more. We are all drugging more. We are all finding ways of dealing with the stress in our lives. maybe not contributing to quality mental health, but I am no mental health expert. But I just think that all of these things added up together don't send the right message as to where we are going. And this only tangentially has to do with transportation, Paul. So I welcome the opportunity that you gave me to talk about this to your larger
audience. You are correct, Jim. And you know, finally, when I think about this, as you just enunciated, it's just we have this weird dichotomy, Jim, where we seem to allow stuff, like you just said, that either shouldn't be allowed or should be allowed with greater limits. But yet, Jim, and I always use this example, if somebody were to go to Hartford right now and propose a bill, for example, to loosen up, Jim, tobacco's availability to kids or vaping or something like that, I mean, people would be screaming and yelling from the high heavens, right? But it just seems with this other stuff, Jim, that's, you know, I don't think tobacco is a hallucinogen when you're driving, but this other stuff, there's kind of this, shh, let it go because we need whatever, you know?
Well, I don't know what that whatever is. I mean, it's like... You know, it's like guns. When is enough enough? Mm-hmm. When do the people that make our laws listen to the concerns of their constituents and do something about this? The problem is many of the people that are up there in Hartford representing us have a problem with drinking themselves. And I don't know what the solution to that is, aside from, you know, shining a spotlight on that and asking these questions. I think that you will probably find alcohol served in much more controlled ways at Capitol receptions going forward. I think there's much more sensitivity just to the optics of what that looks like now after these two particular cases. But meanwhile, they're passing bills that are affecting the rest of us as well, too.
Mm-hmm. Jim, thank you for the stop by. Appreciate it. And
Jose back on there.
Before I do that, I'm still shaking that you use the words misspent youth. I shudder to think what Jim Cameron did in his misspent youth. But I know you don't want to publicly comment on that, do you?
My long-haired hippie days working as an FM disc jockey.
That's right.
The tapes are out there. Just look for them.
The tapes.
The statute of limitations has expired.
Jim, you said tapes. That ages both of us, my friend. Oh, the tape. What is that? Jim Cameron, thanks. We'll talk to you next month, my friend.
Thanks.
Appreciate it. All right, bye-bye. Yeah. Yeah, well, folks, you can tell with Jim's pipes there. Yes, he was a longtime radio guy. If you ever took a swimming course or a water safety course, maybe with your Boy Scout or Girl Scout troop or at your local YMCA or YWCA, whatever, or in your high school or middle school or junior high, you may remember the instructor saying that if you get scared of water, if you think you're going to drown, if you tense up and you start to flail away and your muscles become tense and you have all this extra energy that you're just pushing and shoving with and you have a better chance of not surviving. Right? What do they say? What's the first thing you learn in a swimming class? You learn to float. You learn to not fear the water. You learn to float. Float on your back. Float on your stomach. You know, stuff like that. Well, I think, and I know a lot of you aren't going to be happy when I say this, but I think the Republican electorate nationally, and even here in Connecticut, judging by who they gravitated toward in the last election, you better learn how to swim. Because some of these numbers I'm seeing are mind-boggling. And I understand people can vote for who they want to. But to me, I think you're just tensing up and you're not thinking this one through. And a lot of the Republican Party is living in, and conservatives in general, I know not every conservative is a Republican, and not every Republican is an uber conservative. I get that. But the only thing that is preventing the Republican Party and conservatives in general from moving forward here in the state and gaining a better foothold, both here in the state and nationally, trying to rebound off of what happened in 2020, not just at the electorate level, but nationally, but in races all around the country, Senate races that should have easily been won by Republicans that weren't because of bad candidates. The only reason that that recovery is not happening anytime soon is to me still this, and I gotta say it, and I know a lot of you people are going, well, are you back on this again? Yes, I am. And I'm gonna be on this until people wise up. This undying loyalty, it seems, by these numbers and these blinders that people are wearing when it comes to former President Trump. You heard that story top of the hour from our friends at NBC Radio. Former President Trump is favored by 61% of 3,571 potential Republican primary voters in a survey conducted late last week by Morning Consult. So right now, and I don't quite get this. If somebody can explain this to me, you will win my undying loyalty and thanks. But here you have a guy that was defeated pretty soundly in 2020, a guy whose endorsed candidates largely got trounced in 2022, including some candidates here in the state, particularly in the Dick Blumenthal race. And I know I've mentioned this before, but guess what? You're going to hear it again and again and again and again until I get it through to you people. You had a candidate in this state who firmly attached herself at the hip to Mr. Trump, and she got blown out of the water. You had ridiculously bad Senate candidates in Pennsylvania, in New Hampshire, in other states. In Georgia, I mean, Herschel Walker, what are you kidding me? And yet, I see these numbers here, and they're not that far off from the other polls. 61% of Republicans and Republican leaners and potential GOP voters are aligning themselves with President Trump. Now, I also bring this up because I don't know whether you heard the latter part of last hour, and our new national compadre here, Eric Erickson, on from noon to 2, Monday through Friday here on WICC, he said something so strikingly simple but profound. You know, sometimes profound things that make you think, right? Profound things that make you think don't have to be said with that huge, deep thought. Sometimes it's the simple things that, you know, you smack your head, yourself in the forehead going, geez, why didn't I think of that? So with all this still love and splendor being given to Mr. Trump, and I think he did do some good things, despite the roadblocks he ran into and couldn't control himself, which is why he lost the last election and the January 6th stuff was inexcusable. You know, you look at that and 60% of people want to go with that. And for some unknown reason, I can't fathom that. But, you know, you look at that and as Eric Erickson said, well, if there is still a belief, a professed belief among Trump people that the election was stolen and there was funny business, and let's assume that that might have been the case. Well, as Eric mentioned at the end of last hour, in case you were or weren't listening, he said, well, what's to prevent that again this time if Mr. Trump is the Republican nominee. So has anything in 2.5, closing in on 3 years now, has anything been done at the local level or at the national level that would convince you as a Trump voter or somebody maybe among the 60% of Republicans who will likely vote for him again over Ron DeSantis and over Nikki Haley and over Tim Scott and over Mike Pence? Has anything happened in the last year, year and a half, 2 years, that would make you say, well, all that's been taken care of now. It's good. We're going to just, all the ways that the election was stolen, they've been cleaned up. Nothing's changed. So back to my original point, my swimming analogy here. You understand what's happening here? Some Republicans, some conservatives are still so freaking angry that it is clouding their intellect. I'm telling you, folks, I'm sorry to say it, but I'm going to keep saying it until you wake up. You are so angry over what happened or what didn't happen in 2020 that you're not using any logic. You're not using any logic. You're so angry, you're going to say, well, we're going to get him again with Trump. All right, what is the evidence that that's going to work? Another story came out yesterday in a major publication. It might have been in The Hill or one of the D.C. publications, maybe Politico. I remember glancing at it. And it said, hey, the Republicans still have big problems with white suburban voters this year. Okay. And running Donald Trump again is going to solve that? Now, look, running Mike Pence might not work with white suburban women voters. Running Ron DeSantis or Nikki Haley or Tim Scott or Mike Pompeo or something like that, that might not work. But why would you go with something someone or some person or some mode that you know was once before and likely will be a tremendous turnoff to the voters you need? Why would you do that? Why? Because, again, back to my swimming analogy, you're not relaxed. You're not taking a deep breath. You're flailing away in the water because you're angry. You're angry at, I don't know, the establishment. You're angry at the system. You're angry at the Democrats. You're angry at Joe Biden. You're angry at Joe Biden. Whatever. You're angry, and that anger might make you make a ridiculously bad choice again. And again, I will mention over and over, you say, and a lot of you folks, I hear the anger. I see the anger on my social media feeds. I can't believe that nobody cares about the Biden family thing. I can't believe news broke last night after we got off the air here that the IRS and the Justice Departments are changing up their investigators of the Hunter Biden thing. What a shock. I can't believe this. I can't believe that nobody cares about the Durham report. No, they care. But what they care about is not making any of this important enough that would make anybody think not to vote for Joe Biden. So the mere presence of Mr. Trump still around, although he had a pretty interesting and substantive single term that he did before he screwed it up, just having him there is clouding the ability of the news organizations and of everyone else to take a breath, to wipe their eyes clean, and to take a look at what in the hell is going on. And because Donald Trump, at least at this stage, now who knows 6-8 months from now, but at least because at this stage he is the alternative to Mr. Biden or Ms. Harris or whomever will be the Democratic flag holder in 2024, because he's the alternative, it allows people to look past a lot of stuff that's a little seedy on the Biden thing here. Again, now there's rumors that the indictment of Hunter Biden may be coming down, which is why what happened yesterday at the top of the hour did after we got off. But again, if Donald Trump wasn't around, if he had ridden off into the sunset, and the specter of him not having, as I'm looking here on my computer, 61% support from Republicans in this new poll, if that wasn't around, you really think Democrats would be comfortable with that? Joe Biden, he'll win again. He beats Trump, and he beats Trump in this poll. Is anybody awake on the Republican side? Apparently not enough of the voters. You know why? Because you're all still so angry you can't clear your head.